the pool of Bethesda was larger than I had ever imagined. It was located near the sheep market gate, or the sheep gate, within the walls of the old city of Jerusalem. Parts of it were more of a small reservoir than an actual pool. It might well be, if memory serves, about the size of this sanctuary squared. The gospel account said it had five porticos, and in those porticos, many people were there, including invalids, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. And part of the larger aqueduct, if you wanted to call it that, was for the cleansing of sheep after slaughter for food, and then also for some temple sacrifice. It had several areas, some of them were 50 to 60 feet deep, with stairs going down, with pools below. Others were less deep, and in one corner, about probably half the size of this chancel, was a shallower pool where this story might have taken place. The legend has it that an angel each day would come and trouble the waters, and the first person in the pool the next day would be healed. It's all in ruin now. The sides made of stone have crumbled, but enough remains to get a sense of what it had been like. On two sides, on the corners, there was an open space like a square, and it was a gathering place, a marketplace, a social meeting place. And as I stood there in mid-May a year ago, I tried to imagine the bustle of activity, the noise of many languages, perhaps the bleating of sheep back in that first century. John's gospel tells us, as Ben so beautifully read, there was a festival, and Jesus and a group of his followers went up to Jerusalem for that festival. Oh, the crowds, the noise. It's hard to imagine what it might be. Maybe like the end of the Esplanade concert on the Charles, or like a 4th of July celebration, or like New Year's Eve in Copley Square, without the lights streaming on the facade of the Boston Public Library. But such crowds attract townspeople and merchants and families, as well as hucksters and street preachers and pickpockets, all the varied people you might expect at such a time. So, in our story today, Jesus and his entourage around him, with off to one side the authorities who were watching to catch him out, whatever he might say or do that they could use against him. Jesus came near the pool and saw a man lying near one of the porticos. Why this man? Why not that one? These stories, you see, are often composite stories describing some dimension of the kingdom of God or some aspect that the gospel writers want to be sure is included in the text. This man, this particular man, was sitting by the pool of Bethesda for 38 years. And Jesus looked at this man and he said, "Do you want to be made well? Do you want to be made whole? Said another way, do you want to be healed?" And people gathered in closer to hear this dialogue between Jesus and the man by the pool. This, you see, is high drama. At first blush, the question, "Do you want to be healed?" is kind of silly, perhaps a bit dumb. He has been sitting there daily for 38 years waiting to get into that pool. Couldn't Jesus have come up with a little bit better question? Of course he wanted to be healed. But you see, that kind of confrontation is not what we learn in theological seminary. We learn to be more pastoral. Do you have family nearby? Who is bringing you food? Can we make a home visit? We'll pray for you on Sunday. All those are good things. But Jesus never went to seminary, you see. And there's a certain frankness and upfrontness with his question. But now the question has been asked. It's out there. It's in the world. Do you want to be made well? Do you want to be healed? I take this question in a metaphoric sense, not literally, with people with severe disabilities and illnesses. This is not the sermon for that kind of topic. This scene that I would like to present to you is for those who have some say in how their lives might be shaped. The service station where I have my car serviced is a friendly place. The owner and I have good conversations on theology and everything else. Within the last year, he asked me, could I have a word with one of his mechanics? Apparently, this young man in his early 30s was having a tough time. His fiancée had taken her life through drug overdose. He was burdened with grief and guilt. The owner gave him some time to talk with me, so the only free place was the inspection bay, where cars are inspected for the yearly sticker. So he and I stood in there, and I could smell the alcohol on his breath and see his bloodshot eyes. He told me his story with tears running down his cheeks. Drinking every night, guilt, grief, not to have picked up the signs of her depression. He didn't know what to do. In the course of our conversation, with him asking what could or should he do, I posed the question to him rather pointedly and directly. Do you want to die too? Do you want to take your life through alcohol and grief? And that is the question you need to answer, my young friend. Sooner the better. Will your dying honor your fiancée? Would that be a testament to her life? Oh, you see, I've been to seminary, but I was rather direct. I felt the situation, however, warranted it. It's not always the best. Don't approach people that way. But sometimes you just have to make that decision. I said, you need to answer the question, pointing at his grease-stained overalls. Do you want to be made whole? And through tears and his grief, he said, yes, Don. For her sake and for mine, I want to be healed. You see, it's Jesus' question. From the sheep gate in old Jerusalem to the auto inspection bay in my town 2,000 years later, do you want to be healed? But the question is not only for individuals in crisis. I think it also applies to the body politic. In December of 2012, 20 months ago, it's hard to believe it's that long ago, the Newtown, Connecticut massacre took place. And as a result, the long simmering issue of meaningful gun control came to the fore yet again. And after long political haggling and uproar by the NRA, the proposed legislation that was made omitted any assault ban rifles, omitted limiting gun clips from 100 to 10. It was a watered-down bill, and the simple proposal, yet still good, was to have better background checks of felons, people charged with domestic abuse, people who are mentally disturbed, and so on, from purchasing guns. It was a simple watered-down bill to bring some measure of hope and of healing, not only to the grieving parents, but to the nation as a whole. And because of a threat of the filibuster and pressure of the NRA, they couldn't get the 60 votes to override the threat of a filibuster, and so it never got to the floor of the Senate to be voted on. And according to Slate.com, just this week, 58,252 deaths by guns happened in the United States since the Newtown killing. That includes suicides as well as assaults on others, but still by guns. Or in Ferguson, Missouri, we'll hear a report from Kate Rogers in just a little while. The violence of overreaction of police with military-style weapons in a small town? We are a violent society. So she brought our peace cranes for healing. So Jesus' question, you see, reverberates from the Sheep Gate Pool in Old Jerusalem to the sticker inspection bay in my hometown, to the United States Senate, to Ferguson, Missouri. Do you want to be healed? Do you want to take steps to be made whole, even small steps? Not everyone answers yes. A student I supervised some 2 years ago came to Harvard Divinity School in midlife. She's a champion surfer in California, and she developed a program there that she brought with her called Serenity Sisters, based loosely on AA, for women who were destitute, abused, on drugs, working the streets, a variety of predicaments, some with young children, you see, 15, 16, they bore a child, they were abandoned, they have no education, and with some with young children, you know, you cannot live on food stamps and provide housing and food, shelter. Serenity Sisters brought them to Boston by my students. I was invited to be her field education supervisor through Harvard Divinity School. I couldn't go to the meetings, obviously, it was only for women, but through case studies and verbatims and spirited conversation on the nature of human worth and of God's inclusive grace, I caught a sense of the intensity of those weekly meetings. And part of those meetings was reference to a book, 4 or 5 or 6 short chapters, really not really chapters, some 40 or 50 words per chapter. It was part of their program, helping each member see where they were. Chapter 1, I'm walking down a narrow street and there's a gaping hole in the middle and I fall into that gaping hole. What else can I do? Another chapter, I'm walking down the narrow street. I know the hole is there. I try to avoid it by trying to walk around the edges, but there's no support, there's no railing, there's no hands to reach out to me, and I fall in. What else can I do? And the final chapter, I'm walking down the narrow street, and that gaping hole is still there, and I say to myself, there must be another street. Let me find out where it is. I want to take it. And through prayer and song and laughter and challenging of one another, they see where they are on their journey. They try to hold one another accountable as they move through those chapters. And many of these women would answer a resounding yes to Jesus' question, but then the support is needed for safety, for rehabilitation, for housing, for restraining orders against abusive men, and on and on and on. But they've begun the process by saying yes, you see. From Jerusalem's Sheep Gate in the first century to the inspection sticker bay at my service station, to the dead children at Newtown, Connecticut, and the cowardice of the United States Senate, to our nation, with answers still not yet firmed up in light of Ferguson, Missouri, to the Monday afternoon group meetings in Boston with women who have nowhere else to turn. The question is out there. Do you want to be healed? Do you want to be made whole? But we are here today, and the question is not only for them, but for us. Where does healing need to take place in your life and in mine? What are we consumed by? Prejudices, not only race and gender, but ethnicity, creeds, illegals? What about consumerism, the need to constantly have and to get and to possess? What about enviousness of someone with a better job or more pay or seemingly having a better and more exciting life? And it gnaws at us. Why them and not me? What about fear, of speaking out against injustice in the workplace or in the larger world, or risking social protest when it is appropriate for fear that we may be hurt or there's danger or whatever, and on. The story today, you see, intrudes on our comfortability. It asks a question of us. Do you want to be made whole? It takes what one theologian calls our flat prose lives and injects new urgency, new power, and new questions into those lives. And as we leave here today and later on in the day and the weeks to come, let that question reverberate in our minds and in our hearts. What is it in our lives to which this question applies? And if you have the courage to respond to Jesus, yes, I want to be made whole. Then Jesus' response to the man at the pool of Bethesda is also for you and for me. You will begin the process. So he said to the man, come, stand up, take the first step. Pick up your mat. Begin to walk. He said, come. Take the first step. Pick up your mat and begin to walk. May we have the courage to also say yes. Amen.